Tonight, a landmark night in television history. After 33 years, the final broadcast of Late Night with David Letterman, a changing of the guard in late night television. To talk more about that, we're joined on the phone by Brian Abrams, author of And Now, An Oral History of Late Night with David Letterman, 1982 to 1993. Brian, thanks for joining us for a night that seemed like would never actually come.
I know. I'm excited. I don't even know what to expect for tonight. I'm all of a sudden like really giddy about it, even though, to be honest, I've been really cynical about the CBS show. I mean, I'm a fan of the NBC one. I mean, I think any hardcore Letterman fan would probably agree, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, and you bring up a great point there that I want to get to about the change in the show, and you chronicle the early years, the NBC series, and actually go back even to the days of when I first fell in love with David Letterman, and that was back on the daytime show that I used to love as a college kid years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's strange is that I'm 36, so I wasn't able to experience David Letterman in the 80s when he was broadcast at 12:30 at night after Johnny. Because when David Letterman moved from 12:30 at NBC to 11:30 at CBS in 1993, NBC pretty much just locked up those tapes. They've been in an archive for nearly two decades. So for a lot of people that are celebrating his exit tonight, or you know, just over his years on TV, there are many of us who haven't even seen some of the great episodes that he's responsible for.
Well, you talked to so many people associated with the show, and I think brought up a key point that he certainly came around at the right time. And I was a fan of Johnny Carson as well, but Letterman was destined to do a different type of show that really parodied some of the showbiz excesses and the fawning over celebrities, and it was a perfect time for him to step into that role.
Yeah, I think that it's a strange thing to look at talk shows now and not... You know, what Letterman did in the 80s is so deeply ingrained in the fabric of talk shows today, whether it's Fallon or Kimmel or even a Jon Stewart Daily Show, we don't recognize it anymore. But, yeah, once upon a time, you know, Carson was the only game in town, and it was this very sort of straightforward, two-dimensional, nice guy in a tie sitting at a desk with celebrities, and the banter would be witty, but It was not self-aware. I think Letterman brought this irony and this sort of obsession about unimportance, or like you said, this kind of mocking this idea that we're supposed to all just gawk at these celebrities like they shine brighter than the sun and they're the greatest things that ever hit the planet. And meanwhile, Letterman's like, no, let's bring the nut lady from Connecticut on and let's sort of let's loosen this thing up and make people realize how silly all of this really is.
It was a challenge to find writers that shared Dave's comic sensibilities. And it's interesting that a guy from Indiana would find some sort of simpatico relationship with a bunch of these Harvard guys whose background was writing for the Harvard Lampoon.
Well, I think that if you can find a sensibility between the Lampoon guys and, you know, a Protestant Midwesterner kind of square, I think it's that they both have a certain kind of restraint. They don't do the Mel Brooksy kind of shticky thing, the schmaltzy thing. There's just a dry wit in all their humor. And, I mean, I think that's what synced up. And the Harvard Lampoon guys, I mean, essentially kept coming through the show and hired through the show because it was very much a farming system in that way. I mean, and I think, you know, not that Steve O'Donnell, who was the head writer for years, wouldn't look elsewhere, but, I mean, he knew there was just so many competent people coming through that way, and he probably had, like, you know, 35 other things to do that day. So whenever there was a new slot open, you know, he brought someone up from the Lampoon farm, you know?
We're talking with Brian Abrams, the author of And Now, An Oral History of Late Night with David Letterman, 1982 to 1993, and that was the year that he made the switch over to CBS, and it wasn't just the move to an earlier time slot, but as several people said in your book, it was also moving to that bigger, more comfortable Ed Sullivan Theater that changed the show and certainly took away some of the intimacy and maybe even some of the spontaneity.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and I think, like you, as you pointed out, a lot of the writers agree with that, too, that once upon a time, you know, when he's running the 12:30 show on the sixth floor of 30 Rock, and maybe there's 200 seats in the studio. It's this very small kind of clubhousey feel, and all of a sudden, when they go across the street to CBS and the Ed Sullivan Theater, it becomes this grand thing. It becomes a spectacle, and actually kind of becomes the thing that they were making fun of to begin with. But, you know, in Letterman's defense, I think that, you know, people change, and I don't think he wanted to be a 45-year-old kid in a clubhouse anymore, and, you know, he wanted to be Johnny, basically, and he became his version of that.
Well, here we are now with him moving on, other changes in the late-night landscape. Do you see anybody out there now that could have anything approaching the staying power in late-night of David Letterman?
Well, obviously, you know, Fallon is kicking all kinds of butt at NBC. It doesn't mean that I like it. It doesn't mean I think he's a bad person either. I'm not really into, you know, he has more of this throwback to, you know, this sort of 1950s kind of showman era where everyone's playing bingo and making funny faces. It doesn't quite appeal to me, but, you know, I guess the talk show format, I mean, it's generational in attitudes, right? And and so is comedy. So whatever kind of witty, cynical view came out of the Letterman video generation era, the era in which I think young people, Gen Xers, looked back and said, this Hollywood stuff feels kind of phony. Maybe right now Fallon is embracing something's more about the internet culture, where we have very cheery things in listicles and YouTube, and he seems to be championing that. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what Colbert does, though. I mean, he seems like he'll be the smart one of the bunch going forward.
Brian, before we let you go, I also have to ask you about your new book, A Party Like a President. You were described, I read online, as the Ken Burns of presidential alcoholism, and this new book chronicles some of that.
That was a book that I worked on for maybe 2.5 or 3 years with an illustrator named John Mathias. And that's actually out in bookstores now as well. But it essentially, it's just an opportunity for me to take a look at the history of America through partying, and hopefully try to learn more about each of our presidents, not through, say, their legislation, you know, or political maneuvers, but, you know, what pills they popped and who cheated on their wives and so forth. It was a blast to research.
Well, now, so who is, of all the presidents, and we've heard stories about Andrew Jackson and his wild inaugural party, and, of course, Ulysses Grant. Harding apparently had some issues. Garfield, I think, tried to sneak booze into the White House illegally. But who is the biggest drinker of all of our presidents?
Oh, boy. I mean, I actually, during one point, I tried to figure out some kind of Moneyball-esque chart where I wanted to give points to someone if they, you know, pop pills on a regular basis, or if they slept with showgirls or whatever. Tried to figure out who was the most debaucherous of the presidents. But as far as drinking goes, you know, my sort of shorthand, idiot's answer would be Grover Cleveland.
Wow.
Only because... among the drinking presidents, of which there are probably like half, he has the most body mass. So I think he could probably handle the most.
That's fabulous. And so one more thing to add to the list, along with only guy to serve 2 non-consecutive terms. There you go.
Exactly.
That's great information. Now, thank you, Brian. Hey, we appreciate you making some time to talk mostly about David Letterman with us. Enjoy the show tonight and continued success.
Thank you very much.